Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Patriot Nation Radio, Constitutional Truth with Shar Sines. I'm your hostess, Shar Sines. Tonight, we are going to have our guest, W.H. Cratch, or I should say our co-host, W.H. Cratch, from North Carolina. Apparently, he has survived the Hurricane Matthew. Hopefully, Hurricane Matthew doesn't come back and give us a second hit on that East Coast. We'll also be simulcasting with the milkman over there at Spread the Truth. And you guys need to go ahead and get on the phone at 347-637-3942. Press 1 to get in on the conversation. And like always, let's get started with a little bit of information.
You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942. Visit TrueTexasPatriotGear.com. Buy this gear to support efforts by like-minded patriots in Texas who met at the first Stand By Me for Liberty rally. The group is lending their time and efforts to help political prisoners to let them know they are not being forgotten. Visit TrueTexasPatriotGear.com and buy some gear and show your patriotic support for those who are standing for liberty.
Was free. So, brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, judicial tomfoolery and court jesters, as well as a bunch of saber rattling going on this week. Of course, that's not everything that's going on this week. We've got evil clowns, too. You know, it puts me in mind of that old song from the 70s, clowns to the left of me and jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yeah, I tell you, I don't know. I don't know, ladies and gentlemen. I just don't know. But anyway, this week, a lot has gone on out in Oregon. The trial this week has been the defense putting on its defense. Mr. Ammon Bundy had the honor and duty and pleasure, I guess, of being on the stand in his own defense for 3 days. And I think it has worn rather thin on Judge Brown. Bless her heart. Yeah, that's a Southernism. For those of you who are not from the South, you will not know that bless your heart has two meanings. It can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. You know, we can mean it nicely, or sometimes we can mean it in a sarcastic kind of way. And with regard to Judge Brown, I mean it in its full Southern sarcasm. Bless her heart. She's just going to have to suck it up, Buttercup. That's all I have to say. Judge Brown's going to have to deal with the defendants having the right to defend themselves. The prosecution had as much time as they wanted at bat, and they took the time that they wanted. They really didn't have any evidence against them for the charge or charges, you know, the biggest one being conspiracy, to bring against them. Most of what they brought against them as evidence was social media posts and, you know, the odd email and other type of evidence. Really, they didn't have any hard evidence is what I'm getting to. They tried to string together the odd bit and piece of Now, and I'm talking about conspiracy here. I'm not talking about the things that were left behind at the refuge by various players once they got there. You have to understand that a conspiracy charge is in reference to the players, two or more, in advance of the activity occurring, knowingly and willfully, coming together and planning it out, and et cetera and so on, whatever it is they are conspiring or having or being charged with having conspired to do, not the actual evidence of the activities that they are alleging to have done. So any of the legal weapons and legal ammunition and, you know, even the notebooks and such for any training exercises that they're alleging to have accused them of doing that were found at the refuge itself have absolutely nothing to do with it. But what we have here is a case of the prosecution putting on a big, huge showing of every single weapon for the most part, all the ammunition. I mean, just boatloads and boat tons of that. The odd interview that was editorialized and cut and whatever, as media will do for time constraints and whatnot. And a lot of social media posting that the Cushion chose to cherry pick in order to make their case. So this week, Mr. Ammon Bundy is on the stand for 3 days. And let me back up just a little bit here. The defense has always maintained its defense of adverse possession for their reason for going there. And Judge Brown has, in numerous pretrial orders, declared that that defense is not going to be allowed. Okay. How she can disallow a particular line of defense, I'm not certain, but she has disallowed that particular line of defense. She has also ordered that, you know, part of the defense line was that the original protest heading that way was in defense of the Hammonds being resentenced for their original charges, and that not only the community, as was testified to by Mr. Eaton, Butch Eaton, but also people from other areas around Oregon and Western states were not happy with this resentencing to this minimum mandatory sentence of 5 years each. Not just because of the punishment not fitting the crime and the double standard of the government employees engaging in similar activities and having similar results and never even being slapped on the wrist for, or even getting a write up in their employee forms for the same activities, but also for the fact that Mr. Hammond the Elder is so much older, and it's essentially for all intents and purposes a life sentence for him, because should he not die in prison, he will get out a very old man. And anyone who knows anything about the prison system in the United States knows that it's a very arduous place to be. It's very difficult on the body, on the mental state, the spiritual state, and so on and so forth. So it does age one physically, emotionally, and psychologically to spend any deal of time, any period of time in jail or in a prison system. So while he may only spend 5 years chronologically in the system, it may add 10 to 15 years to his life, essentially giving him a death sentence. So, but the judge had ordered that those two things cannot be brought up in court. Well, because the FBI insisted on using Facebook posts or social media posts as their evidence, and, you know, insisted that they had a warrant for same and this, that, and the other. And all of this evidence, of course, during pre-trial discovery, et cetera, and so on, was handed over to the various defendants, Mr. Bundy and his attorney, and I'm sure the other defendants, once they have their turn in the stand. Mr. Bundy took that opportunity to pull what is called exculpatory evidence. In other words, evidence that is meaningful to his defense, that indicates his innocence in this case. So he pulled multiple videos or postings or what have you. I mean, obviously I wasn't there. Those of you who listen to me know that I reside in the great state of Texas. And so I was not there in Portland. So I can't tell you precisely what evidence was pulled, but based on court observers and media outlet reports, he used evidence indicating that they were there in defense of the Hammond case, and they were there for the adverse possession. And it's my understanding that the defense raised objections to that based on Judge Brown's previous orders to not use that. And she said, well, and apparently she sustained or overruled those objections and said, well, you opened the door by allowing such evidence. So while none of us believe that she is very fair, do we believe that she is unbiased because of the mounting evidence against her in such in that manner, it is obvious that when it comes to glaring procedural rules, she has no other option but to rule for the defense when it comes to these things. Things that are going to be obviously overturned at an upper appellate court. Because even the Ninth Circuit Court, which is considered to be the most liberal appellate court of the 13 appellate courts across the Republic, even they would have to overturn something like that on appeal by reading the transcript and looking at the information and so on and so forth. They would have to say, they did kind of allow that evidence in, and therefore they did open the door, and therefore this can now be argued. So, she had to make a common sense decision there and allow for this argument to come in. So for 3 days, Mr. Bundy has been allowed to discuss adverse possession case. I'm sure there were plenty of other objections that were sustained, and there were some details that weren't allowed to be gone into. But the idea has been placed into the minds of the jury. And any of us who's ever watched even a single episode of Law and Order or some other television show of that nature can attest to the fact that we've heard the saying, you can't unring the bell. So even if something has been said in open court and a jury is instructed to ignore, you can't not hear something. You can't not see something. You can't unknow something. So instructing a jury to ignore certain facts of evidence is going to be really difficult to do in certain cases. So yesterday we got an update from one of the court observers who's been there for just about every single pretrial hearing as well. And this individual brought some stuff to my attention with regard to Judge Brown, and it really concerns me with this case, because if Judge Brown really does have her head explode during the defense portion of this case, and understand that this is the same judge who ordered that all the defendants be tried together under one case. And understand that these defendants asked to have separate cases. They asked for each of them to be tried separately with separate judges and so on and so forth. And she was the one that ordered that they all be tried at the same time with the same case. So here it is, the prosecution obviously trying all of them at the same time only has one, how do they put it? They use a certain legal term, case in something or other, but they only have one theory to present for all seven defendants. So of course the prosecution portion is going to be much shorter. But when you have seven separate defendants, and each of them went there for a different reason, because they are all saying that they did not conspire. So they're going to have seven separate different defense theories. Okay. Otherwise, it looks like they conspired if they all say the same thing. Now, of course, there will be some that agree that it was adverse possession. There will be some that agree that it was because of the Hammonds. And so there's going to be some overlap, but they're all going to have their own reasons for having gone. They're all going to deny a conspiracy, and I'm not going to say whether they conspired or not, because by golly, I wasn't there and I don't know. I'm going to assume that they didn't, because we have to maintain a system of jurisprudence whereby it is innocent until proven guilty. And ladies and gentlemen, not just in this case, but in our entire injustice system, for many decades, we have not had an innocent until proven guilty for a long time. People are daily accused of crimes. And because of media, the court of public opinion, judicial orders gagging people, and yet the government goes out, you know, the prosecution, because it's always the government that is bringing the cases against people, whether it be a local government or a federal government or somewhere in between. They're always allowed to present the case in some form or fashion to the public. The defense attorneys are the ones that aren't allowed to rebut, because they are the ones who can ill afford and least afford any kind of sanctions. The judge is not going to tell the federal government employees, okay, and in this case, the prosecuting attorneys, weren't you ordered to keep your mouth shut? Here's a $50,000 fine. No, they're not going to do that, and they're certainly not going to jail them for having done that. So anytime that these misstatements to the media or leaks or what have you occur at any level, and nothing is ever said or done. And it's sad. It's very, very sad, because we have gone from a system, especially in the court of public opinion, from, and understand that our jury of our peers is always drawn from the public. We end up with a jury that has already been exposed to a case and that has already form some kind of opinion, whether it be about that specific case or those types of cases. Okay? Because we've all been programmed. We've been programmed by our media, whether that media be the television box, or whether it be the newspaper, or whether it be the computer, or what have you. And so we have to keep that in mind. And I have found myself, as much of a champion for liberty as I am, I have found myself, when it comes to particular types of cases that are an emotional hot button for me, jumping to conclusions. And we need to stop that. America, we need to stop that. We need to stop jumping to emotional conclusions and start making the assumption that what we are being told is not the full story, that what we are being told could well be manipulated, that we are only being given the part of the story that makes the government or those that are bringing the charges to look best in that light, that the government can and will manipulate evidence that it presents to the public, that the government can and will tell us lies. Because why wouldn't it? Why would it tell us the truth? And the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And if you want to ask the other question, why would it lie to us? It would lie to us so that we continue to go to work and pay our taxes, to go home, and to be good little citizens, and to not stand up to it and say, hey, wait a minute, this is wrong. You can't do that. You shouldn't do that. So what happened, I believe it was yesterday during court, is that Mr. Bundy, under direct by various defense counsel, was asked if he might read from the United States Constitution. And I believe at one point he actually volunteered to read from the United States Constitution. On two occasions, he was directly ordered by Judge Brown to not read from the Constitution. She actually said, we will not be reading that in this courtroom. I beg your pardon? Why is reading from the Constitution? He didn't ask to read from the Book of Mormon. Okay, understand he is Mormon. He didn't ask to read from the Book of Mormon. He didn't ask to read from a Quran. He didn't ask to read from the Holy Bible. He didn't ask to read from Jules Verne. He was going to read from the founding document, the Constitution, the very document that, unless I'm wrong, the judges themselves raise their right hand and swear on a holy book of their choice to uphold and defend. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they don't. I don't know. I haven't dug into it. Maybe they swear to uphold and defend the Krispy Kreme donut recipe. I don't know. But she absolutely, completely, and totally and utterly refused to allow him to read from the Constitution in open court. What does the government have to fear for the jurors to hear the Constitution being read in open court? What does the government have to fear from the Constitution itself? That's a very important question. That is a very, very important question. And she also got a little bit off, before I get back to the, what does she have to fear from the Constitution? She got a little bit off kilter with regard to him being on the stand. Apparently there was going to be another witness, and, she made it clear that if this other witness, and I believe it was a family member of the Hammonds, if this other witness was simply going to reiterate what, certain testimony that Mr. Bundy had already given, that there was no need for that particular witness to be there. That Mr. Bundy had already called 10 witnesses. Excuse me, do we have a number? Where in the Constitution does it say, where in the Bill of Rights does it say that we are limited to the number of witnesses that we can call for our defense? It doesn't. I can promise you that it doesn't. It sure as hell doesn't. Hey! This is Sharp.
Hey. Hey, this is WH.
I thought so, but I weren't sure, and I was like, okay, because it didn't match the number I had on file. Yeah, it says nowhere in the Bill of Rights that, one is entitled to call witnesses to their defense and have counsel and so on and so forth. It doesn't say that one can only have 10 witnesses, because I can promise you that the prosecution had as many daggum witnesses as they daggum wanted. And yet, Judge Brown's going to have a coronary, and her head's going to explode actually, I think what's going to happen is we're going to see an episode from Monty Python's Flying Circus, and the top of her head's going to come open at the hinge. But instead of seeing butterflies or, you know, flowers or people or, you know, severed feet or whatever come spilling out of her head, I think what we're going to see is dust mites or dust bunnies come out of her head, because there's absolutely nothing in there. There can't be anything in there. She even goes further in her whining and bitching and moaning that if the other defendants who are present, who are going to get on the stand, are going to have 3 days, that she's going to have to maintain time in that court. She's going to have to, what? That she doesn't, you know, something to the effect of, you know, she mentions one particular defendant by name, and she doesn't want this particular defendant to be having, you know, 3 days on the stand. I'm sorry, lady, but, you know, you can get over your damn self. If Shauna Cox needs 5 days, she gets 5 days. If Mr. Fry needs 8 days, he gets 8 days. And you're just going to have to sit back there and suck it up, and you're going to have to allow the government to authorize the money for everybody, for the parking meters and the jury and everything else that's going to have to occur. Too bad, so sad. If you were so worried about money, because that was what she, you know, one of the things she said, this is, you know, parking meters and money and all that. Well, I guess you shouldn't have brought the stupid, frivolous fucking charges to begin with then.
I can tell you what they have. They have got a neutron bomb on their hands right now. They have opened up a can of worms. That if, like with the whole situation, how the whole standoff was covered by the media and how they made it sound like, you know, I mean, it was a Mexican standoff of Clint Eastwood proportions out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They have really got a situation where Judge Brown, if she continues to screw up, she's got one hell of a mess on her hands right now. And the public, I mean, most of the public from the patriotic community knows that Bundy is completely innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they will not, why she will not allow the Constitution to be read in that courtroom should be enough to show the listeners and the people that are following this case just how corrupt and how screwed up this government system really is.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's just insane how crazy these people are. But the public opinion is turning against the justice system. That's why this case, this is going to be one hell of a mess. You watch what I tell you.
Oh, yeah. It is one hell of a mess. You know, like I mentioned to people all the time, if you want some, you know, as unbiased as you can get for the area reports, daily reports,
right,
on what's going on out there, go to read Maxine Bernstein's court reports every day. Okay. I mean, honest to Pete, for somebody that is in the area and lives in Portland, she's as neutral as you're going to get. And of course, there's always Sherry Duval with Readout News, and she sends out reports as well, and they match. So that tells me that
somebody's
Maxine,
doing the homework.
That, yes, well, Sherry Duval is in the courtroom as well. So
yep.
If Sherry Duval with Readout News, which is a conservative alternative outlet, if what she says and what Maxine says are matching, that tells me that Maxine is telling the truth. Okay.
Yeah, she's got her head screwed on right.
Okay. Now, if you can go and pay attention to the Oregonian, because I know that sometimes Sherry can't always get her posts 100% all the time, and Maxine will tweet, as does Sherry, and Maxine, because she's real media, she gets a few more privileges in the courtroom than Sherry does, okay? Sherry is just treated as a court observer. She's not treated as real media. So she has to do things a little differently than Maxine does. So, but either way you look at it, when you're getting the same story from two outlets, okay, and they're matching. Now, if you can stomach the Oregonian, then go read Maxine Bernstein. The problem is, do not go into the comment section. Because,
oh, God, no.
Because what will happen is you will want to engage what I call the Portlandia coffee clatch. Those people, and you will be, see, I know, I've started to recognize the names. Those people, there's about 10 or 15 of them, will get in there and they will just tear people apart. And
well, they're probably paid trolls.
You can't stomach it. Well, I don't know if they're paid trolls or not, but you just can't stomach it. I go in there
there's
just
a whole
to
community
learn.
Of, yeah, there's a whole community of them that's all they do is cause dissension, distraction,
yeah.
And basically, like Char says, you got to overlook the comment section, go somewhere else and make your comments, because they're, once they figure out who you are,
uh-huh.
Then you're on their list and do nothing but antagonize you and feed you false information. So,
yeah.
We had to learn
yeah.
early on.
Yeah. I have an account with the Oregonian, and I used to comment in there at the very, very beginning when all this was going on, but I left it alone. They mentioned a website that they – anyway, I'm not going to go into that. Anyhow, I'll tell you all about it later in a chat group. But these guys, they're I look at what they say, because sometimes I get information that I need from the other side. It's one of those art of war
kind of things.
Well, that's
the best way to – well, I mean, that's the best way to get intelligence from the enemy is let them hang
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah.
And
but,
they do a great job at that, very
yeah.
good job at that.
Yeah, so that's what I do with looking at the comment section. But anyway, so that's what's going on in court this week for the most part. What I'm seeing happening is the case falling apart on itself, coming apart at the seams, because the only thing – oh, and of course, what I forgot to mention, because it happened on Monday, and it was something we discussed on Friday, because and it was pending – excuse me – was, as we know, Friday, Shauna Cox filed a motion to have the gun charges dismissed, and they were dismissed on Monday. They had to be dropped because, of course, they had no evidence on her. The only eyewitness that the prosecution thought they had was Mr. Eaton. And when he was on the stand, he point blank said, "I don't know that I ever saw her with a gun on her." So because of that, and he made it clear on Mr. Hoffman's show Thursday night. He was the guest on Thursday night, last night. He made it clear that he was never a hostile witness, that he had always been a witness for the prosecution, but because they had called him to be, and he had told them from the beginning that he was always on the side of the Patriots, that he had always agreed with what they were doing, and that the prosecution may not like what he has to say. And it was when he was testifying that the judge herself said, "It sounds like you have a hostile witness on your hands."
Don't you love him?
Yeah, it's not that he ever switched sides. He had always been on the side of the Patriots, and he was very clear to the prosecution when they told him they were going to call him to the stand.
Yeah, but you know
but
this as well as I do, that I mean, that's the fact that they pull a Hillary Clinton. And, well, I don't remember that. I can't recall that Mr. Eaton ever said that. Yeah.
Right. But, see, Mr. Eaton was very clear with them from the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
They just chose to ignore, thinking that they could intimidate. And he's like, "They're not going to intimidate me into saying something that I didn't see, say, do, hear, whatever." You know, and that's not to say that he's, you know, I'm not going to say that he's some sort of superhero, because he would tell everybody that he's not. He has more than once said that the men and women at the refuge are better men than he. The thing is that Mr. Eaton was very brave to get up on that stand as a prosecution witness and speak truth.
Yeah.
And something else, while we're on the topic of prosecution witnesses, is something that I need to get out there to the listeners, which is very important for people to understand. We have quite a handful in both the Oregon and Nevada cases of those who have been indicted having taken plea deals. Our nation, excuse me, let me rephrase this. Our republic, okay, we've got some background noise. Not sure who's got the background noise. Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. We have this misconception through our programming. And I know Gillis likes when I use that word programming, because he'll come on and give us a 30-minute diatribe of television programming if I let him. But it really is because of television programming, movie programming, book programming, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, just call it media programming. We have this misconception across America that if someone takes a plea deal, they must be guilty. And that is wrong. That is a falsehood. That is a fallacy. People take plea deals for various reasons. And people with public defenders take plea deals because public defenders have nothing else better to do. Here's something to understand about a public defender. One, they are drawn from a pool of local attorneys. Contrary to popular myth, public defenders are not a group. It's not a group of private attorneys, and that's what they do is defend the public. No. Public defenders are drawn from private attorneys, which means that they already have their own cases with people that have come in off the street and hired them. But because they're part of the bar and they're, quote, officers of the court, and they happen to litigate as defense attorneys, they are required to be part of the public defense pool. So every now and then, their names are drawn to be a public defender. And so they are going to vociferously work towards a plea. And the reason why is because they are paid a set negotiated price as a public defender. They don't get to do the billable hours like they would if they were under a private contract. They have to work, and however much they work, they still get paid the same set amount. So they have absolutely no incentive to go to trial, period. They will talk their client into a plea deal 99.99% of the time. And of course, the prosecution will bring out all the big guns against the defendant, whether the defendant is guilty of all the crimes, any of the crimes, or none of the crimes is irrelevant. What is relevant is numbers for the prosecution. And so they want to have good numbers of prosecuted cases, closed cases, okay? And the public defender wants to be done and over with, the less work they have to do so they can get back to their paying clients. Nearly every plea deal, no matter what level of government it comes from, includes a clause that says, and this is when we're dealing with cases that have multiple defendants. It includes a clause that says you may be called to testify for the state. Okay? So when people go out with regard to Oregon or Nevada or both of them, and they start casting aspersions on persons who have taken pleas and call them rats, They are speaking out of their buttholes because they don't have the first clue as to how a plea deal is written and or negotiated. Because they are not understanding that these men and women are being pressured to take these deals. They are being pressured by additional evidence that may be unknown to the public, whether it be real or imagined evidence. They are being pressured with charges being brought against friends and family members that perhaps their family members may be in delicate situations to where a long and arduous prison sentence may be harmful and detrimental to the family members. It might be a situation where it could harm the livelihood of remaining adult family members because of their association with them. Any number of things can be brought to pressure against someone to cause them to take a plea deal. Which brings me to the case of Mr. Jerry DeLimas. He's charged in Nevada, and he took a plea in Nevada. He asked Gloria Navarro, the judge presiding over that case, he asked her, if I commit perjury on the stand by pleading guilty to this in this plea deal, won't I be, if I lie, won't I be committing perjury? And she said something to the effect of, no, not exactly. It's more complicated than that. Are you kidding me? So he tells her that he would be lying to plead guilty and to accept this deal presented by the government in Nevada. And understand that Mr. DeLimas worked for the Trump campaign, and his wife is or was a New Hampshire state rep. So it's not like he's just some nobody married to some nobody. He's a decorated Marine. He has served our country. His wife has served our country in the state of New Hampshire. And he is concerned for the safety of his family. He was threatened with charges being brought against others who traveled with him to Bunkerville, one of whom was his son. So to save his family and his friends, he fell on his sword, as it were, and opted for this plea deal. I can promise you there is something in that deal that says he may or may not be called to testify for the prosecution. Does that make him a rat? No. I say it makes him an honorable man because he chose to give up his security, his safety, and his liberty to hopefully, because of course, there's no, I can promise you that the government did not put in this plea deal, we promise to cease and desist any and all charges against your son and anybody else that, you know, we threatened to bring charges against. I can promise you that's not in the deal. But they used it as a threat against him that if he didn't take the deal, they would. Okay. Now, Mr. DeLimas is attempting to get out of that deal. And why is he attempting to get out of that deal? Because of exculpatory evidence that has since been revealed. Now, how shitty is that, America?
Land of the free, home of the brave, baby.
So, That's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a judge in Nevada who was appointed or suggested or recommended by, what is that Dirty Harry's name? Harry Reid. And where does Harry Reid own land? Oh, my gosh, right next to the Bundy Ranch. And yeah, I know. And wouldn't you know that the Bundy Ranch happens to be the last private holding in that area? Other than Mr. Reed's, of course. Yeah.
God damn.
I know. Sounds very much like the Hammond Ranch out there by Malheur. And don't you know, in that same Oregonian that I referenced earlier, that not 2 weeks ago, there was an article posted about Harney County being listed for mining permit issuing soon. And guess for what? Yellow cake uranium. Oh, my God. Are you telling me that all us tinfoil hat crazy people talking about there being uranium out there at Malheur are right? Say it ain't so. Say it ain't
so.
Here's
your sign.
I know. I'm gonna pass the tinfoil hat over to one of y'all and let y'all take over from there because y'all have done more investigation on that one than I have.
Well, Gillis, do you want to go first?
Well, we know for a fact that back in the day, it used to be called Venture One Capital. It used to be part of the stock exchange, used to be traded, used to be. Now it's called Uranium One or Oregon ENN, which is both traded, sold, whatever. It's part of a debt that America, our politicians have created China owns 10% of America the way it stands because of the debt that we have with them. And basically what Hillary Clinton, Harry Reid, Terry Farioli, Kate Brown, the list goes on. There's probably no less than 300 names on this document that I have in my possession, clearly stating each and every one of their intentions, whether it's Barack Obama, his vice president's son is also involved with Barrick Gold.
Really?
The names go on forever, folks. So if you got stock right now and you need money, I know that there's a big vein of gold that they found over in Baker City that is owned and mined right now, being mined right now by Barrick Gold. So basically, folks, our country, come on now, our country is being sold out by the zip code, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We know for a fact that there's also uranium in North Dakota and South Dakota near the pipeline. We also know that Anna J. Brown has two mining patents, land patents in Montana or in Nevada, right next to the Bundy Ranch. We know I just found last month that she also has a patented land patent in Minor, South Dakota as well. So basically, she's dirty all the way through. Both properties were purchased at below standard from either the BLM, which is the Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife. And basically what's going on is all these officials that have some sort of judicial background, they go out, they find this property because the Earth is being pinged by a satellite that's in the stratosphere. Harry Reid's involved with it. He actually was one of the heads of the Bureau of Land Management He's got two sons and a daughter that's deeply involved. They're attorneys. They've been working deals in Las Vegas and a couple of other major metropolitan areas in that state. They're involved in the gambling scene, the real estate scene. They're trying to make the deal with the largest energy source that comes from China. And they want to come in and they want to set up this giant solar panel city out in the middle of this 200,000 acres, and they want to extract the energy from the sun there. They've done it in other areas around the country. They're deeply involved. You've got Ukraine that's involved. You've got the yellow cake that's actually being. If you're a scientist or a professor in a college, you actually can get a permit to go down and possess yellow cake uranium. There's a gentleman in California. He's 18 years old, and he has a permit for yellow cake uranium. He has it in his garage, and he's doing testing with that himself. There was a write-up on it about 3 or 4 months ago. Folks, this yellow cake uranium, you can make dirty bombs out of it. There's so many things that you can do with it. It's just, it's horrendous how our community is allowing this tyrannical government just to come in and use the word eminent domain and steal your land. But we know they've been doing it since the 50s, 60s, and 70s back east. It's nothing new. It's just more presented now. They come in and they declare an area a national forest, a national park, a memorial site. And basically they come in like, whoa, we're going to protect your land. We're going to allow you to go hunting and fishing, all this and that. And basically what they do is they have a road that goes in and it comes back out. And you never see what's on the other side of it. And you have to buy permits to be able to walk on the land. You have to buy a fishing license. You have to buy a hunting license. You have to win a lottery in order to shoot, whether it's an elk or a deer, a bobcat, whatever. Basically, all of your God-given rights are not God-given rights no longer. There are privileges that you have must purchase. So I could go on, but go ahead, W.H.
Well, you know, there's another. I'm going to have to put on my tinfoil hat here. I have to get it snugged up right quick. I've got mine folded there into a cowboy hat, so I've got to. Well, there was another topic that we were discussing earlier against the saber rattling that's been going on, and it ties into what you're talking about. I had discussed. Yes,
we
ma'am.
Will bring that one at the second hour, but
okay.
But is it to deal with the yellow cake? How do you want to transition?
I was gonna, because I was gonna go full fledged into the operations in Syria and the information that was released on Monday by Julian Assange through two separate organizations.
Okay. I will let you do that in just a moment. Before we do that, I want to go ahead and play this really cool song that I heard last night on James Bostic's show. Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens. And then when we come back, we will talk about that. But I just want to share with you guys real quick that these cases, the one that is currently ongoing in Oregon, and then 18 or 20 of them will transfer over to Nevada, whether they are found not guilty in Oregon or whether they're found guilty in Oregon and have to take it to appellate court. 18 or 20 of them will have to go over to Nevada and get ready for their February 2017 case. These two cases are extremely important with regard to the judicial and federal tyranny that we are facing right now in this nation, in this republic, in this union of nation states. We have to pay close attention to how United States Code okay, law, man-made law, is being used against us. It's a maxim of law that man-made law is capricious, and it is transient, and it is used to control the behavior of man. This republic was founded upon natural law. And natural law is that which comes from nature and nature's creator. Natural law is always the same. It never changes. And you have to keep that in mind. There is a major difference between that which is lawful and that which is legal. Legal is always that which is defined by statutes and codes and ordinances that are written by man. That which is lawful is that which is what occurs in nature. And when you put those two together and you think about it and you make those comparisons, those contrasts and comparisons, it will all fall together. A similar argument, or I won't say argument, but a debate occurred between myself and a fellow patriot brother when he was trying to say that there's a difference or a delineation and levels of evil. He was making some comparisons between some true Rat Finks in the Oregon situation. And I said, evil is evil. There's no delineation. That's a man-made thing. And this person threw out, he said, well, surely you would agree that the punishment for pedophilia should be stronger than that for a traffic ticket. And I said, well, of course, because pedophilia is a true crime and a traffic ticket is not. So when exactly. You think about that, folks, you need to understand that even though they both have statutes on the books, if you commit pedophilia, in other words, if you have sex with a minor child, you have actually done harm to that person. But if you run a red light, who have you harmed? Unless you actually have an impact with another vehicle or run into a human being with that vehicle, if all you have done is run a red light and continued down the highway and no injury or harm was caused to another person or another person's property, you have not committed a real crime. The only person injured in that case is the state, because you broke one of their fake statutes that does nothing more than generate income for the state.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's what you need to keep in mind when you start assessing these punishment fit the crime and this, that, and the other. So before we go on to the next hour, and I let WH wide and loose with the second section of discussion, I'm going to play this cute little song, and I hope y'all enjoy.
One night, Farmer Brown was taking the air after locking up the barn with the greatest of care. Then down in the hen house, somebody stirred when he shouted, "Who's there? Who's there?" I'm telling the truth. This is what he heard. You can believe it or not. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself. Stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep, and you bust in and hobble, 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 hobble with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around and shaking the ground. You're raising up a powerful dust. We chickens trying to sleep, you bust in and hobble, 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 hobble. It's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do. We got eggs to lay, worms to dig, grounds to scratch. And it takes a lot of setting, getting chicks to hatch. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. So quiet yourself, stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. And kindly point that gun the other way and hobble, hobble, hobble off and hit the hay. No. nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. Shh, quiet yourself and stop that fuss. There ain't nobody here but us. We chickens trying to sleep and you bust in and ba-ba-oodle with your chin. There ain't nobody here but us chickens. Now there ain't nobody here at all. You're stomping around and shaking the ground while you raising up a powerful dust. We chickens trying to sleep and you bust in and yaggedy, 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 it's a sin. Tomorrow is a busy day. We got things to do, we got eggs to lay, worms to dig, grounds to scratch, and it takes a lot of setting getting chicks to hatch. Now there ain't nobody here but us chickens. There ain't nobody here at all. Shh, now quiet yourself and stop that fuss, cause there ain't nobody here but us. And kind of point that gun the other way and hobble, hobble, hobble up and hit the hay.
I am sorry, y'all. I had to play that. I heard that last night on James Bostick's Conservative Perspective. And I said, you know what? I have got to have that song on my show. And, of course, he was like, well, go to YouTube. And I was like, why, when it's right here in the studio? But I'm telling you what, does that not feel like our government sometimes? Always sticking their nose where it don't belong. Ain't nobody here but us chickens.
Alrighty, that song was probably written in the late 40s and early 50s, probably.
It was. It was. I think he said it was the Andrews Sisters and somebody else. But anyhow, so what we've got going on in the second hour is we're going to talk about a U.S. State Department statement issued on the 3rd of October. John Kirby issued this statement. He's the Assistant Secretary and Department Spokesman, Bureau of Public Affairs.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Hello? Sure.
All we really need to be worried about are the ones wearing black robes and sitting up on benches. The United States is suspending its participation in bilateral channels with Russia that were established to sustain the cessation of hostilities. This is not a decision that was taken lightly. The United States spared no effort in negotiating and attempting to implement an arrangement with Russia aimed at reducing violence, providing unhindered humanitarian access, and degrading terrorist organizations operating in Syria, including Daesh and Al-Qaeda in Syria. Understand that Daesh is the newspeak for ISIS, okay? Unfortunately, Russia failed to live up to its own commitments, including its obligation under international humanitarian law and UNSRC 2254, and was also either unwilling or unable to ensure Syrian regime adherence to the arrangements to which Moscow agreed. Rather, Russia and the Syrian regime have chosen to pursue a military course inconsistent with the cessation of hostilities, as demonstrated by their intensified attacks against civilian areas, targeting of critical infrastructure such as hospitals, and preventing humanitarian aid from reaching civilians in need, including through the September 19 attack on a humanitarian aid convoy. The U.S. will also withdraw personnel that had been dispatched in anticipation of the possible establishment of the Joint Implementation Center, to ensure the safety of our respective military personnel and enable the fight against Daesh, the United States will continue to utilize the channel of communications established with Russia to de-conflict counterterrorism operations in Syria. Okay. We have much saber rattling going on here, ladies and gentlemen, do we not? I'm just like, really? Now, when I read this, the first thing that came to my mind was how soon the public mind forgets. And how stupid can we in the United States continue to be? We really have no business being in any foreign nation. If Assad wants to bomb the crap out of his people, he can. Let his people take up arms against him if he's so bad. I don't believe that he is so bad. I don't believe that he has done what the federal government says that he has. But be that as it may, allow the Syrian people to stand up for their own liberty. That is what our founders did in 1776 and before. So if it's good for us, why is it not good enough for the rest of the world? That's a principle of liberty that so few understand. We are not the world's policing force. We are not the world's referee.
Well, you just said it right there.
We do not have the right nor obligation to go around the globe chastising foreign governments about what they do. And then jumping in there and allegedly attempting to foment regime change and make everything all more better when all we do is affect enrichment of the 1% and the elite. Let's take the Vietnam conflict, for example. Allegedly, that was about stopping communism. And let's remember, this is when Russia was still our enemy during the Cold War, because Russia was then the USSR. And we go dashing into Vietnam. Of course, prior to that, it was Korea. And look at those two nations now. They are now two separate nations, North and South Korea and North and South Vietnam. What did we do? We effectively broke up two nations. We didn't change
exactly shit.
We just made two separate nations. And one is allegedly democratic and the other one is still communist. Nothing changed. But apparently during Vietnam and probably Korea as well, we needed rubber in this country. It may have been Korea. I may have my history mixed up, but understand that Korea came right on the heels of World War II. And during World War II, we used up a lot of rubber and other resources, establishing our one and only major domestic product, which is machinery of war. That is what the United States does best. It creates machineries and machines and so forth for war. So we used up a lot of things. And those regions have rubber trees. We didn't go in there to fight communism. We went in there to overtake places.
You still there?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing.
I think her
be breaking up
connection
really bad.
Must be bad.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah, this is the second time that it's done it.
Yeah. They might be trying to kick her out. They've done that
they
before. Either or.
I'm going to try to PM her right now.
Yeah. Well, we'll continue on with the conversation and while WH tries to get a hold of her. I know it's off topic, but geoengineering. What I've been working on. I found out that there's an attorney in California. It's the law firm of Humphrey and Grant, and they have went ahead and filed a lawsuit against Monsanto He's part of the U.S. Anti-Geoengineering Legal Team at geoengineeringwatch.org. If you guys need to connect up, I told you I was trying to work on something against the geoengineering. I mean, look up. You guys have seen my videos. There's another attorney that's part of the anti-geoengineering legal team. His name is Robert Wegman, and he's out of Hampton Roads, Virginia, and he's also involved with it. So if you guys got any information, if you guys got video and you want to get on board with this, I have found three attorneys that are part of the anti-geoengineering legal team. And the last one's name is Petra Broken. She's an attorney living in Minnesota. She's also involved with the geoengineering, anti-geoengineering legal team. If you guys need to get a hold of me, we're all involved here. We're all being sprayed with several heavy metals. It's affected our health. They've been doing it for 35 years minimum. We have just noticed it even more as we get closer and closer to the middle of our century. Remember, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 is a real deal. I don't know what happened to Shar, but we're going to just continue on. I'm going to go ahead and...
I have tried to contact her, and I had 4G LTE. Now I have absolutely nothing. The data is on. I have no internet connection whatsoever right now. So they probably tried to put a kink in the broadcast.
Yeah, they've done it before. It's not nothing new. You don't have any. You can't PM anything right now?
I have no internet connection. It is not showing that it is showing. Everything's wide open.
Jill, if you're there, please give her a call. Okay, I just got a PM from her.
Okay.
We don't hear you.
Yeah, we have no contact with Shore.
Yeah, I got her. She's PMing me right now. We do not hear you. Oh.
Yeah, Mission Control has tried to shut us down.
right. So I just PM'd her back saying that we do not hear her. So we'll just continue on until she figures it out,
okay,
just like we do in the past. So I'm going to go ahead and play this soundbite. So when she comes back, I'll shut it off if she comes back beforehand. If not, well, let's just listen to this.
Okay.
I'm a regular American. Over the course of my 54 years, I've lived the sort of life that many of you have. I've been failed. I've been fallen. I've struggled and overcame and failed again. I've known hunger. I've enjoyed feast. I'm a street cop, an old soldier, a husband, a father, a Christian. I'm Irish and English and German. My story could be the tale of any American, regardless of color or creed. Despite our own individual heritage and culture, all of us, every one of us, through our lives and by our family's history, has woven the thread that defines our flag, has dedicated life and limb and treasure to establish the nation we love. All of us, young, old, wealthy, poor, black, white, liberal, conservative, every single one of us, first and foremost, is an American. And if you're listening to this message, and if you can agree on a basic premise I've just stated, then please lend me your ear for the next couple of minutes. If you can't even set aside your hate long enough to allow truth to speak to your heart, then by all means, step aside, child, and let the adults work. America is a nation built by imperfect men, driven by perfect intent. We've overcome every imaginable horror through our history. Some of it, horrors of our own creation. This is the way of a man's life. My own is no exception, nor is yours. And thus, also, is the way of a nation's life. America has never been without fault, nor have we ever claimed such a status. America is, however, the very finest example of free men assembled that the world has ever established. American soldiers have died on every shore to preserve our nation intact. The sun never sets on American dedication to the foundational principle that defines our own Constitution, that all men are created equal. American citizens work tirelessly across the globe to bring relief to the poor, to bring peace to the besieged, to bring stability to the shaken, and to bring freedom to the oppressed. Yet now, our own nation is threatened. America is in grave peril from threat across the seas and also from within. The elected and appointed elitist few who have seized power in Washington have squandered our wealth, mortgaged our children's future, and betrayed our trust. America faces a $20 trillion debt. Even with courageous action now, our so-called leaders in D.C. have mortgaged our future for an entire generation yet unborn. Our once respected and feared status as the world's most powerful nation has been diminished. Our own allies across the globe no longer trust us. Our borders are no longer sovereign. Our cities are on fire.
You have reached the voicemail box of 407694.
The threats we face are menacing and real, but an American nation standing as one is a force the world's evils cannot defeat, a force that career politicians fear, a force that every peril dreads, that foreign horrors like ISIS tremble before. You are that force. We are that force. America's not done. Real Americans are not defeated. We are strong. We are one. I'm Captain Clay Higgins, a simple man, a humble American man. From bended knee, I thank you for what you are. My brothers and sisters all, joined by the bond of our spirit.
Folks, it says, I open everyone up. Go to your line, post the number, please. We all go to your line, post the number. Okay. 3, 3, 6, 4, 2, 8, 50. There we go. So everybody's going to come over to my show. Her show's, I guess, shut down. So we've done this before. This is nothing new. Apparently they're attacking her blog talk. They've done that to mine several times as well.
Yeah, they're messing with my internet connection right now too. So
they're pulling
with me
uncommon.
Too.
Yeah. So no problem, but, Charlotte, wherever you are. She's going to call in my show, I guess. So, and you're over there on her show, so I don't know how that's going to work, but that's okay. We'll just continue on.
Yeah, there has been a whole lot of saber rattling recently, and I'm sure that you've been following it too. I'm sure that the listeners have been following. We got to look, and just like Shore was talking about, we are not the world Gestapo, so to say, and I hate to use the term Gestapo, but
right.
But that's in the sense of the word. That is exactly what it has come to. And the situation in Syria, I had stated this many times. This is a false operation, folks. This is none other than a classic war games situation being set up, and the American people are too stupid to see it. Many countries across the world are seeing this. My biggest statement